So I am really hoping that this is the last Maybird podcast episode ever with bad audio quality. Last week, you guys heard we have new mics. They don't click or clatter or do awful stuff like that. This should be the last one. And this episode was a labor of love. Almost a month ago now? Like, what, 3 weeks ago? We did an interview with John Knobloch that you guys are going to hear in a sec that was just awesome. And as we were wrapping that up, going to save the interview, the free software that we use to record this podcast crashed. And we lost the file, which was a really awful feeling. After consulting with one of our relatives who specializes in data recovery, and Dan spending about 20 hours of his own time, we were able to manually, basically we ended up with a file that was twice as long as it started, that repeated itself at random intervals.
Made really weird screeching.
Really awful, awful noises. And Dan has put, so you guys are about to hear an episode that sounds.
Well, the funny thing is it took me about 10 or 11 hours in total to do the editing.
Yes.
And I would just do a couple hours a day for, it seems like, the past few weeks. We were going to pay Amy $150 to do it.
I guess with inflation, that's not as much money.
I thought that sounded like a lot of money.
But it kind of broke down to like about minimum wage after the amount of time that this took. So
the funny thing is like Amy's out of school now and she's not working, and I thought, but apparently she's too busy to do this. So I was the one that got it.
So Dan got it done. I should say as well, right now we're not recording on microphones. We're just talking into my laptop. So this will sound awful too. Like, yeah. we for whatever reason, we had to do this on the old computer and we can't get the mics plugged into this one and we couldn't get it off this machine. It's just been a mess. So this is going to sound rough, but the underlying interview here
should
was
be good.
Awesome.
Now you're going to hear like a little ticking in the background, mm-hmm. and occasionally like it just kept looping and I kept having to cut out things that were repeated, and sometimes it was like in the middle of sentences. So
yeah, like the theme song, you said you just gave up on. Like,
I tried to edit the theme song.
Actually, listen to the theme song just to get an idea of what this whole entire file was like.
Oh, and then at the end of the last like
20 seconds, 20 seconds
of the recording, I didn't edit just for fun, just so you guys could hear what it was like before I edited it. So
really quick, we're going to hit a couple of, because the announcements from 3 weeks ago are kind of irrelevant now. So we're going to go over a couple of things too, before we get into this. Again, I'm sorry, this probably sounds like we're at the bottom of the well. We had the iCup yesterday, some stuff we want to go over there first.
The iCup was just so much fun. What a party. We were out in Richfield, super fun course, but it was just brutal, brutal hot. And I think it was very appropriate that we had our hydration podcast right before the Richfield race. And actually on the podcast, I've had a lot of people reach out to me, some agreeing with what I said and others not as much. But several people tried the maple syrup with a little bit of sodium and really liked it. And, you know, just for your everyday rides and, you know, nothing too extreme, that might be a good go-to just for, you know, to slightly improve your hydration. And I liked the feedback on that. Miles Baker, for the record, is all about the 100 grams per bottle, and it seems to be doing him well. So, you know, but
take everything we say with a grain of salt. Have we not made that pun yet?
No, not yet. Especially
That's malpractice. That's podcast malpractice that neither of us caught that last time. So I got that.
But the iCup was just awesome. Really, really good Maybird representation. We had a lot of like top step podiums. It was kind of crazy. Like Riley Graham got first place for freshman, sophomore girls. Ainsley Haas got top step podium for the JV girls. Miles Baker for the varsity boys, Braden McNichols for the JV boys. We had Charles Lawrence for the sport open.
My boy Charles.
Whoop, whoop. Oh, and then a cool one was Curtis I say Curdo.
Condrio? I don't know how to say your last name. Curtis. I've worked with you for like 3 years now, and I still don't know how to say
Curtis
your last name.
Curtis with a really cool last name. Joe and I disagree on how to say it. Maybe you could let us know the proper pronunciation. Isn't he just like the classiest kid
ever? Curtis is like genuinely one of my favorite personalities ever. He's like the least annoying person I've ever met, and he is a monster. Like, the kid is a psych. He's a swimmer and a basketball player. So remember, I had my boys over for a basketball night at my apartment, and Curtis, I don't like know enough about basketball to say, but like, he is the best basketball player I've ever played with myself, hands down, far and away. I'm so happy to see Curtis third place in varsity.
No,
or in elite.
Elite. Yeah.
Dang.
So, and that, yeah, each lap was over 8 miles and they did 4 laps. So I think it was like a 35 mile race. So
dang. Well,
I was going to throw out the highlight of the Richfield trip, though, was I got to eat lunch with Megatron. So, if you know, you know, but I just want to throw that out there. That was super awesome. So,
yeah. And I just have to say too, like, this is what we want Maybird to do, is just create kids who can go down and win an iCup while they have a 4.0 GPA and like do other cool stuff too. Like, you know, like, this is like when we see people being this successful at iCups, I'm like, that means we're doing what we're doing right. You know, because I don't think we'll ever be at World Cups. Who knows? Maybe
some
not.
Of us, yeah, I think there's a couple that have potential to maybe be
100%.
Potential?
You guys
professional.
Have professional.
Professional someday, but.
Professional, provincial.
But I think it's, I think it's awesome that, you know, we have people that can do well in the elite iCup races, because that's. Gosh, that would be
that's
awesome.
Pretty cool. That's super cool. Are you done? Is that your stuff?
Yeah, that's all my stuff.
So Tour de France is coming up, starts on Saturday, which will be really, really cool. I am very excited. I've made an official Tour de France fantasy league for Maybird to do. I'm super excited about this. I used to do this at Competitive Cyclist when I worked there, and it is so much fun. You basically, like, you build your team and then you pick your stage winner every day, and there's a leaderboard and stuff. I might have some people from Contender do it with me too. I'm hoping we have a whole bunch of people who participate. It's super easy and free. So I'm going to have a link for that on the Maybird Instagram probably that you can click. Go ahead and get that set up. Look for more on that later. But I think, like, the Tour de France is a really big cultural thing for cycling. It's the biggest bike race in the world.
Greg LeMond, Lance 100%. Armstrong.
Yeah, you're like almost in the right decade. You're only like three off. But I do think that, like, you should roughly know, like, you should know who's in the yellow jersey and you should know who wins, right? Like, I think this is fun to follow. People have been telling me recently that we don't do as much road stuff as we used to, and that there's some people who miss that. So, we'll figure out a cool prize for the winner after 3 weeks. Unless it's me, I'm going to crush it. But if I win, we'll have second place get the prize. So those are some fighting words from me. I'd love for somebody to make me look bad, but look for that. Other than that.
Yeah. I hope everyone enjoys this episode. And, remember, I left the last few seconds unedited. So just
for you guys to appreciate how bad it was. So moving forward, these episodes will hopefully sound better. I really hope we don't lose another one. I think if we lose another one, we'll just kind of let it go. But this one was good enough. And John Knobloch,
he was kind of hard to get a hold of. So
this was one we had to save. And it's kind of a bummer. Like, of all of the crappy episodes we've ever done that would kind of have been fine to lose, like, the one that we lost was the worst. So I hope you guys enjoy. And we will come to you next week with much, 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 much better audio. All right, so we're back for another one here. We're recording outdoors for the first time in a couple of years, so I'm interested to see how it'll be with the new equipment here. I'm really excited for this one. We have a local legend, John Knobloch, with us today. We're going to go and have a whole bunch of stuff we want to talk to him about.
And since we started this podcast a couple years ago, pretty much the top of my list for people I wanted to get on the podcast has been John Knobloch.
You're not at the top. Yeah.
thanks, Joe and Dan.
I said pretty much at the John.
Yeah. Hear that, Brady?
So, oh
You're not at the top. Yeah.
Thanks, Joe and Dan.
I said pretty much at the
pretty
top.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, that could be Brady. It could be John. We don't know. But
yeah. If we'd love to pick. John's although, kind of the
I do want to get Brady back
here.
On. I do want to get Brady back on and actually get some of his like training secrets and not just talk about like moving couches and stuff.
Yeah. Well,
so Brady, let's get you back and
we'll do a redo on that at some point. Really quickly, just to kind of run over some news. We had Miles Baker representing up at race up in Pocatello, Tour of Pocatello. I don't remember what it's called. Pocatello Speed Fest, something like that, which he won, which was
super cool. Pocatello.
Congratulations to him.
Again, I just think it's so cool when we have our riders out just doing cool events. It's just cool opportunities to try just racing at different opportunities that we normally don't think of. So
that was super, super cool. Any other news we want to run over?
You know, not really. I just did want to say we're kind of approaching the end of the main Maybird season. So, you know, the regular group rides, this is kind of the last week for our regular group rides. But coaches can continue to plan rides on Mondays and Wednesdays occasionally if they like. I would also encourage coaches to try to do some weekend long rides with your groups. And also I'm going to keep doing my Epicish rides. I'm hoping the coaches can kind of support us on those and try and get your groups out there to ride with your groups on those. And, we're hoping to kind of keep things going throughout the summer, but you know, it'll be kind of scaled back. We do have obviously the I-Cups and other races coming up too. So, but the main group rides are kind of coming to an end, but hopefully we can kind of keep some things rolling throughout the NICA season.
So with that all out of the way, I'm really excited to talk to you, John. We've known each other for a decade-ish now.
I think that's about right.
Just about that. Your son, Andy, was one of the first batch of Maybird riders. We rode together on the Skyline team. I still ride with Andy. And I've known for as long as I've known you that you've been involved in trails, but I don't think I appreciated until maybe 4 or 5 years ago just how involved with trails you are. So I'd love to kind of hear the story of how you sort of got into the...
Well, and first of all, let me just point out, like, so as a lot of people know, John's responsible for that trail behind Eastwood Elementary beneath Grandeur Peak. The story behind that is, like, harrowing. It's incredible what went through to get that trail in for us, and he's been involved with a whole bunch of other projects. He's gonna, when he introduces himself, when we stop interrupting him, he'll tell some of those stories. That trail, it's been just such a blessing for the community. It's just such a great after work trail. I see it gets used so much. You know, when you think about it, like, so many people are just so stressed out. We have like jobs that we don't love going to. To be able to come home after work and like not have to hop in a car and hop on that trail. And it's kind of a gateway to some really, really beautiful places. And it's, the trail is just so much fun, and it just gets used and loved and enjoyed by the community. So just on behalf of everyone that lives around here, thank you for that and all the other things you've been involved with.
I'll add an applause track right here.
It was only 20 years in the making.
I know. We're going to have to tell that story, but I just wanted to get that out of the way, just how grateful.
And I'm wearing my Grandeur BST.
That's a cool t-shirt.
I need that t-shirt. Add those to the Maybird store. But what, maybe just give like a little bit of your background, like how you got involved in mountain biking and trails and stuff. Are you from Utah originally?
No, I'm actually originally from upstate New York.
That's right.
So I was born in the 50s, so I'm getting on Medicare now. Oh my gosh. It's crazy stuff. But no, I grew up in upstate New York, and right out of college, I took a job with Chevron in the San Francisco area, and I moved to Marin County.
Oh,
and
Marin
County
is
one
biking.
Of the birthplaces of mountain biking. So I got my first specialized stump jumper in 1982.
No way.
Yeah, I'm on my fifth stump jumper.
You're on your fifth stump jumper?
Wow.
No way.
Yeah, every decade, I get a new stump jumper.
Yeah, that's my gig.
Hashtag sponsored.
Yeah, right. There you go, right? Yeah, we got to specialize in here to do an ad. So you've been riding mountain bikes for as long as mountain bikes have been a thing to ride, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And so I rode in Marin County a lot. And I hardtail, no shocks in the front, right? You know, used to be
been there, done
the
that.
Right fork dimensions to have a little flex in the fork.
Right.
It was long before shocks. But there were fire roads all over Marin County and up on Mount Tamalpais and the Marin Headlands. And I was just, you know, kind of a trail junkie and loved getting out riding because you could see so much more. You know, you're connected to the land and you get great exercise, but you can just see so much more. I like hiking, I like trail running, but I'm not going to go out and do a 30-mile. Much more I'd run or hike, but I can get on my bike and see 30 miles of beautiful land.
It's just after work, yeah, right? Where that would take 2 days on foot, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So I really started doing it then, and I got involved in trails back then. I used to volunteer with the National Park Service when they managed the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. That's the Marin Headlands. And there was a ton of trails all over the place. And at one point then, the Park Service decided they were going to implement new rules and only allow mountain bikes on service roads and not allow mountain bikes on single track anymore.
Oh, really?
So that's maybe when I really got into advocating for trails and pushing. There were a lot more people in Marin County that were serious riders that were much more than myself involved. You know, that was the birthplace of a lot of mountain bike racing. And I had the Park Service person organizing all these public hearings on it say, geez, John, you're like the social trail god. You know every little deer trail everywhere. I said, yeah, and you're trying to shut them down? Well, up with that. We want more trails, not less. This is Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It's not like a conservation area. This is a recreation area. But, of course, it's not like they had their way with us. So, but anyways, that's how I first got involved with advocating for trails and working on trail construction. But, you know, and so then I've lived in Marin for just about 20 years, and I didn't move to Utah till 1998. So I still feel like I'm a newbie here.
You've been here longer than I have by about a year. So
there you go.
Yeah. So this is, what brought you away from California to Utah?
Oh, well, corporate America, Chevron told me that if I wanted my career to go anywhere, I couldn't just stay in the Bay Area for my whole life. I had to go somewhere else. And of course, the oil industry, we had an oil refinery, let's see, in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And Pascagoula, Mississippi.
Okay, okay.
El Paso, Texas.
Getting worse.
Los Angeles.
So maybe a little better.
But I'd been here in Salt Lake on work meetings before and had skied mock snowbird and thigh-deep powder before.
And so you're like,
So I said, if I have to go somewhere, I'll let snowbird and thigh-deep powder before.
And so you're like,
So I said, if I have to go somewhere, I should probably go to Salt Lake.
Okay.
So that's how I ended up here. So they moved me here. And I was here just a few years, and then they wanted me to move to Houston, Texas. And I said, I think that's the end of this.
That's a bridge too far. No need to eat powder in Houston. When you got to Salt Lake, did it, you know, because you mentioned like relationships, which I thought was really interesting. Like, you've basically developed 20 years of relationships in Marin County, and then you've kind of had to develop new relationships here, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. So when I moved here, you know, I knew no one, and I really just got involved by, when I first moved here, I lived in an apartment up near the state capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And so Liz and I would get out and jump on the bikes and go up the service road behind the Capitol that leads up to those communication towers up the ridge. And as we're riding up one day, there's a guy with a bulldozer going across, making a trail.
And
stop and chat with the guy. And it was this guy, Steve Scheid, with the Forest Service. And he was working with the real local legend. I'm not the local legend at all. It's the real person is Troy Duffin.
Okay.
Who actually lives in this neighborhood. He just lives a few streets down from me.
Okay.
And Troy is the one who really helped work with the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Committee to get the first segment of Bonneville Shoreline Trail built, all the way from above Ensign across through City Creek Canyon and up across all the way back behind the University of Utah and Dry Creek and to the Hoogle Zoo.
So how old is that? Because that is, when I think of shoreline, that's like my core trail. Like, how old is that section?
So that was done in 1998.
Oh, okay. So, like, you know, right when you got here.
There were existing pieces. There was the Chevron oil pipeline from Hoogle Zoo going north toward Dry Creek, you know, up behind the university there.
Right.
And lots of people are using that. And that's where the idea, when Rick Reese and Jim Byrne, the real founders of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, came up with the idea, is they wanted to see that extended because that was on the historic shoreline. And they had this vision that you could make a trail along the whole, you know, Bonneville shoreline. And so they pushed trail along the whole, you know, Bonneville shoreline and pushed. And they formed this Bonneville Shoreline Trail Committee in the early 1990s. And they formed an organization, got some people behind it, and they finally got some money from the Utah legislature. Ralph Becker, you know mm-hmm. Ralph Becker?
That's a name I've heard, yeah.
Ralph mm-hmm. Becker, mm-hmm. who used to be the mayor of Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And he started the Bonneville Shoreline Fund and got the legislature to appropriate $100,000 for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail. And with that, they hired Steve Scheid with the Forest Service, because there are some parcels of Forest Service up there, and they built a bunch of sections of trail connecting other existing sections of trail. They, like Dry Creek, was there already, essentially.
Oh, really?
Right. You know, there was some trail up there. It was just a user-created, not a good trail.
Yeah, just kind of some people go hiking up in the hills, and they all kind of end up going the same place.
So they kind of, you know, and if you know the old shoreline trail back there, there's some spots that are good and some spots that are
less good. Yeah,
less good. But anyways, that's how I initially got involved with trails here in Utah. I was interested initially, I believe, at the grand opening with the Salt Lake City mayor and whole host of aficionados were. And I think that was in 2000.
Wow.
So that's when they finally got that section going. And I had moved from near the Capitol up to the neighborhood where you guys used to live,
mm-hmm. yeah.
just below Granger Peak.
Right, yeah.
And through that, then Rick Reese and Jim Byrne asked me if I would be, you know, like to get involved with pushing for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail to connect between Parley's Canyon and Mill Creek Canyon.
So this is
the year 2000.
So this is the year 2000. So I was 1 year old when the idea. So this trail that Dan just met is a long-term project.
Oh,
like
yeah.
my entire life, people have been talking about this trail. And so that's like, so why does it take so long to do that? Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, just get some guys with shovels, go make a trail. What are the barriers when you're like, oh, a trail would be cool there? Yeah. How many, what are the hoop trail? Like, what do you have to jump?
Buckle
through?
Up, everyone.
Yeah, buckle up. Well, at that along that section, there were 10 parcels of private property. There was essentially no public land between Parley's Canyon and Mill Creek Canyon. And it took years and years for those private property parcels to be acquired.
So it
started in the section right near Parley's Canyon, mm-hmm. bought by the Trust for Public Land.
Okay.
Because they were threatening, Utah Power and Light owned that parcel of land, and they were going to sell it to a developer.
Right.
And the developer was going to put in one more road, a whole another set of homes up across there. And we got the Trust for Public Land, and they purchased the land. And then, but they don't purchase it for, they don't have the money to purchase all this land. They do it expecting that they're going to get paid back. And so then we had to do a fundraiser, you know, a bake sale. We got the county and Salt Lake City and neighbors and a whole, I believe, Save Our Canyons and Utah Open Lands got involved. I believe, you know, a lot of people, it takes a village, right, to make this stuff happen. So they got that one parcel purchased. And then over the years, then the family, the Whites, owned a couple of parcels. And they finally decided that their land was landlocked. They weren't going to be able to do anything. And I think they either donated it or gave it to the county at a very low price.
Right.
And then there were a couple more parcels that were donated along the way. But then there were still a couple of more parcels that were blocking the trail. And so finally, what, you know, got things to move was eventually there was one parcel that, you know, I would follow this and I'd track down which parcels were available. I have the county parcel viewer on my desk all the time. I'm always looking at land, trying to figure things
kind
are available.
To do the puzzle of like where could we,
that
you know.
Is the, you know, the nemesis here out what.
And
there was a big parcel up above our now Mill Creek Mayor Jeff Silvestrini's house that had been threatened with development. And I was looking at it one day, and I saw it was up for tax auction because the owner had been in jail and didn't pay his taxes.
Oh, really?
And so I call up the county, and I call up with some people. Hey, do you know this is like up for sale for a tax auction? And everyone was like, what? No. And Mill Creek had just become for sale for a... And so Jeff Silvestrini went down with the folks from Salt Lake County on the county courthouse steps and were able to buy the land at the tax.
No way.
So, yeah, it was amazing because it was really, I think, 5 days after ice auction. I'd seen it just by chance.
And you just happened to see it?
I just happened to see it by chance. And I was then there were only two more parcels that were blocking the way. And of... few years back through our Senator Cullimore, he helped work to get $5 million appropriated for land purchases for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail.
Really?
And so then with that money, we were able to buy these last two parcels. And it was amazing because, you know, it takes a long time. I had been talking with the folks that had owned the one big parcel where the Skyline S is on the hill.
Yeah.
Was 142 acres, and they thought they were going to develop on it somehow.
They thought they were going to develop on that.
Somehow. It was, you know, literally impossible for them to meet building codes and do it. But there's always a dream. And then the folks that owned it, they sold it to somebody else. He, you know, totally bamboozled this guy because he thought he could develop it, but then realized he couldn't. Anyways, the long story short being that finally all the land got purchased. And that opened the door to be able to get the trail built.
So when you say we bought the land, like who owns that land right now? Public?
Salt Lake County Open Space.
Okay. So it belongs
actually,
to the county.
There's a little bit, the city of Mill Creek owns a couple of the parcels.
Okay.
But really Salt Lake County owns most of it.
Okay. And was of it like purchased with tax dollars? Because you said it's like, you mentioned a bunch of different kind of streams of money to buy this stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, like I said, the one piece was from Salt Lake County Open Space was some of the money. And then some of the money was what Senator Cullimore got appropriated from the legislature. And, you know, it kind of cobbled it together over time.
Wow. And so,
you know,
the trail was completed, what, like two years ago, a year ago? When was it actually, like they finished cutting that last bit and opened it up?
It was like beginning of last season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe. Yeah, it's all blur now.
Yeah, because it seemed, and it's... And it's like a really high quality trail too. Where like, how much money does it actually cost? Because it's like there's the cost associated with buying the land. How much money does it actually cost to like get a guy with a bulldozer up there to actually build it?
Oh well, you know, and so I'm also the board chair for an organization, a nonprofit called Trail Utah, because the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Committee, they're not a construction committee. They're really the cheerleaders for the Bonneville Shoreline Trail to try to get it to happen and help, you know, organize it and come up with ideas and push projects through and then get the municipalities along the way to buy the land and own the land and build the trail. But, you know, most of the municipalities along the way, you know, they're busy people. They've got road, they have potholes in the roads to fix, and then they have right. all sorts of projects, sidewalks to fix, power lines, bridges, right? That trails
aren't the only thing.
It's
doing,
not the
right?
highest priority. No. And really, a lot of paved trails like the Jordan River Parkway are higher priorities for them because it serves the core of the community down along in the center of the valley. And the natural surface trails, it takes other partners to help push those along. As chair of the organization Trails Utah, I said, hey, Bo, this is a project we can get done. The quick narrative of, yeah, how do you make a trail project go? So we had the vision, we had the dream. Over the years, we got all the land purchased, and then we worked with the owners of the land, Salt Lake County, to get their approval for us to be able to build a trail there. And it took a little nudging because, of course, they have lots of other things to be working on, tennis courts and swimming pools and rec centers and all sorts of things. And we said, hey, we can get this done, and we'll do it for you. And so they said, okay, you know, you can do this. But then you have to go through all of the permitting for although it's parcels owned by Salt Lake County, it's within Salt Lake County. It's also actually within the municipal boundaries of Mill Creek.
Right. Right. So you have to get, Salt Lake County's okay with it, you have to get Mill Creek.
And then we had to go through permitting, get a conditional use permit from Mill Creek. And so to get your conditional use permit, you have to make sure, you know, crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's, like, you know, verified on the migratory bird website that you're not going to impact any threatened and endangered species, when you have to make sure there's no hazardous waste sites that's along the way. You have to make sure that the SWIP, you know what SWIP is?
Yeah, no. The Stormwater Protection.
Yeah, yeah. Stormwater Protection Act. Is and you'll see that at any construction site. So you need to calculate how much disturbed area you're going to have and whether you need to have a stormwater pollution prevention plan in place or not. And depending on whose money it is, there's different strings attached, if there's federal dollars versus state dollars versus, you know, different grants. And then we had to get the permitting through Mill Creek to build it. And then we had to get money. And, of course, we had committed to a contractor. We really wanted to get this project done. I had been working on this thing for 20 years.
Right, yeah.
Darn it. We were going to get it done. And so we actually hired a contract before we had any money. It was a little bit of a risky deal. But I told Sarah Bennett, who's the executive director of Trails Utah, you know, let's just hire these guys. We got the permit. Let's just, you know, we're going to make this happen. Actually, we hired the contractor before the final ink was dry on the land deal.
Really?
Yeah, I said, you know, we're going to get this done. And so we went ahead and then had to do fundraising, and we wrote a grant, and we got part of the matching money from a grant. And then what you write a request for proposal. So then you have to have the specs all set. Well, this was not only Salt Lake County open space within the boundary of the city of Mill Creek, but there's also a big parcel. The middle third of that trail is on a Forest Service owned parcel.
So Forest Service, people talk about like Forest Service. What are the different considerations when you're dealing with Forest Service land compared to just some guy's land that the county bought?
Well, with the Forest Service, then you have to make sure you have all that through them.
Oh, okay.
So it's a whole other...
Which is a federal thing, right?
Yeah, it's a federal thing. It's the federal government, okay. Right? Although, you know, our Salt Lake Ranger District folks are great to work with. Our trails manager, Zinnia Wilson, is just wonderful and very helpful. And there's a lot of folks in our Salt Lake Ranger District. Our district ranger, Becky Hotze, was supportive. And we were able to get their buy-in to be able to build the trail. We had to get the trail all flagged out, and then they had to approve the alignment. And they were the ones that then said, well, you need to do an invasive species analysis, and said, to make sure that we know all the weeds that were there and then mitigate the weeds before construction. And now we're on the hook to continue to mitigate any invasive weeds for 3 years after construction. So it's just one more weeds for organization that you have to go through. But once we had all that permitting set, all the approvals, then you write a request for proposal, and you have to all the meet trail design standards, right? There are actually standards that are the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, and the U.S. Forest Service have. They're essentially the same. And so, like, this trail is built to the Forest Service Class 3 double-track trail standard.
Okay.
So that gives specifications on the grade and the outslope and the locations on the projections off the surface, you know, things that poke up in the angle of the backslope and the angle of the downslope. You know, there's a whole sheet of all these specifications.
Do they have specifications on the backs, like angles?
Of course. And if you're over a certain side slope, you need rock retaining walls on the downhill edge. Mm-hmm. But there's some latitude within those standards.
Can I just say that the contractor you hired, like, some of the places he was digging, especially that first part where the switchbacks, right, that must have been incredibly difficult, and they did such a good job.
Hugely skilled, those people, to be able to do that. Yeah,
considering
that spec,
what they right? were it's trying
the,
to go through.
There was a company called Nature Trails, and the operator was a guy by the name of Jed Fulmer, and he met his wife when he was here in Salt Lake working on the trail project. So I went to his wedding. It was cool. He's a great guy. He did the Rattlesnake Trail.
He also
did the lowest section of the Upper Pipeline Trail, also Elbow Fork and Mill Creek Canyon.
He has a style.
Those trails kind of have a similar style.
They're
super fun.
And the thing that's similar on those trails is that they're all built on super rocky, steep side slopes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right. And so they are trails that you literally could not build by hand the location. Yeah. And so because he had to use a hydraulic jackhammer attachment onto a mini excavator. And literally, those switchbacks were chiseled into solid rock.
Really?
When you ride on those trails, you don't even notice.
No.
But there's a bunch of places where it cuts through rock, and they had to jackhammer through rock to be able to build it. The same with the Parley's Point Trail on the north side of I-80 going up toward the H-Rock.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that was through solid rock, and they had to use a hydraulic jackhammer. You could not build those trails by hand.
No.
But they ride so smooth and so, you know. And I remember, like, seeing his excavator. Like, I was always watching the progress of that trail. And I would see that excavator, and sometimes it would move really, really fast. And other times it would just be kind of at the same spot for several days. Just, you know, when he was working on those switchbacks, just took so much time.
Exactly. Like, so those switchbacks, I think each one of those switchbacks took, like, at least a full day of jackhammering and chopping, and on some of them, then it was such a steep side slope that the loose rock that came down, I actually was out there with him on slope that the loose rock that came down, on many occasions, and we were actually had to hike down the slope from where he'd cut it to jiggle and adjust the rocks that had come down. Because you didn't want anything loose to come down,
right?
Go tumble and hit somebody, right? That would be the worst of our worlds if somebody got hurt somehow.
Right.
And we were down, like, with this broken up rock, shifting around the rocks, trying to get it to sew into place so that it would be a solid foundation. But, really the spec on that trail, he had a 4 foot wide machine. So he had to, if you picture the outside edge of the back, then you have to be at least 8 feet, and really what we wanted to have, is a 7 foot radius on those turns. Mm-hmm. It's really about your minimum to have a decent rideable turn.
Yeah, because those switchbacks aren't particularly easy.
No,
like I think a lot of like beginner riders would maybe struggle. Right, on those,
a seven foot radius is a tight turn, but doable. And so that's 14 feet, right, from outside edge to inside edge, cut into rock.
Which is incredible.
That's a lot of rock to chisel through. So anyway, so it was a lot of work. And all that gets specced in the request for proposal that we put out. There's also the Forest Service requirements on things like equipment cleaning. Like when they bring in equipment, you have to make sure that it's all pressure washed and clean. And then have the Forest Service inspect it to make sure that we're not bringing invasive weed seeds from North
Carolina. Oh, interesting.
Right? Because that's where these guys are from, North Carolina.
And that would be devastating if you accidentally introduce some awful weed that just takes over everything.
Oh, right.
And spreads
exactly.
For the next
and
20
so,
years. If you, right?
So we had to, you know, every time the equipment came off site and back on site, you had to make sure it was clean and
right.
Because
there's just so much stuff you just would not think of that goes into
weed.
Because you almost think you can just walk up on the hill and take out a shovel and start digging. And I'm actually curious, like if I went out onto the hill, I'm like, oh, a trail would be cooler, and started digging. Like, would that trail just not last? Would it be really destructive, really unsafe? Like, what are the kind of cooler and started? If someone who didn't know what they were doing built a trail, what would that end up looking like? Do you think?
Like the face of grandeur.
Kind of, besides the fact that it'd be illegal to do that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Exactly, right.
I've actually had to stop Annie doing that.
Yeah, if you take a tool up on the hillside and start digging a trail, that's not legal.
Yeah.
And you're probably not going to know the specs to have a proper trail that's going to last the ages, right? When you build a trail and you meet the Forest Service specs, generally you want a trail that's going to be there for 50 years.
Oh, okay.
Right, you want that thing, it's going to be solid, it's going to be a full bench cut into the hillside. So you don't dig 1 foot into the hill and have that pile of loose dirt to make a 2 foot wide tread and call it good, because that outside last foot, that's going to slough off over time, and some stuff's going to come off the back slope. You're going to have like a 6 inch wide trail. It's going to be sketchy. It's not going to be good.
Right.
People won't be able to pass, and you probably won't have the proper outslope, so it'll hold water or get it turned into a mass rut. Water will go down the trail, and it will just not be good.
So when I, you know, I think the whole point of this is when you guys are out there riding on trails, just be so grateful to those who,
like the skilled laborers.
Or no, not just the people that have made them possible.
Right.
You know, that's such, which leads me to a couple other questions. So, like, you know, and like the areas like Corner Canyon or Harriman, where they're just building trails like constantly and all the time, and it seems like why is it so much more difficult to build trails in Salt than it is in Draper? And do they have to go through all these same processes that went through to get that trail in place, or how is it different in different places? Or
well, it comes back around to where you have private property, you have issues, and where you have Forest Service land, you have issues. Now, down in Corner Canyon, where all their trails are, all public land owned by Draper, and it's below the Forest Service boundary.
Okay.
So that gets some, it makes it a lot easier to get things done.
So Draper City owns all that land?
I believe so.
Okay. And none of it's Forest Service. Okay.
Because the Forest Service starts, like, you climb above Jacob's Ladder, you get to that sign that's like, you're entering Lone Peak Wilderness.
That's Wilderness, but I think above the road there is when you start to, somewhere along there is a Forest Service boundary.
So it's really just up to Draper City to approve if a trail can get cut there or not.
And I believe they, yes, and so they're, I'm not sure if it's done through, if Greg Hillbig works through their Parks and Rec Department, I believe, to do maintenance and get trail projects done. So that makes it a lot easier when you have a municipality that has a Parks and Rec organization that works hard to make things happen.
Because it does seem like with your trail above Eastwood Elementary, like it took 20 years to acquire the land, but once they started digging, it took 2 years. You know, they thought they were going to do it in 1 year, but he broke his leg or something.
Yeah.
And you know, it ended up taking two, but that's still a relatively short amount of time. once all the land and everything was acquired. So I guess that would make sense that if Draper owns all that land, I imagine they still have to get like a lot of approval. Do they still have to get that same approval on the slopes and the grades?
And like invasive species and stuff.
Well, and part of the trick is, you know, you need to legal requirements for the municipality or landowner that you're on. So Salt Lake County may have requirements. Draper City might have requirements. And the Forest Service, of course, has requirements. Mill Creek has requirements. Salt Lake City has requirements. And amazingly, they're not all the same. Every time you go to build a trail somewhere, you need to figure out what the land manager requirements are.
So if you were building a trail like from Mill Creek that crosses into, I don't know, Cottonwood Heights or another city or something like that, you'd have to make sure that you're satisfying their requirements that could be totally different.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, and it's always a moving target. It seems like every trail we build, it's different.
So can we, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about like the shoreline area by the zoo and stuff where we, you know, a lot of us, that's kind of where we ride in the early spring and kind of our home turf for a lot of us. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about what's going on there and what happened with Save Our Foothills? And I mean, this right here, we could go on forever on there, but maybe you could just give us kind of the quick version of what's going on there, what's happened in the past.
So that was from the zoo to Ensign Peak was part of the Bonneville Trail.
Right.
That was really the only purpose-built trail in the Salt Lake City foothills.
Yeah.
The rest of the trails were built by folks in their Jeeps and on their motorcycles, been around in the 50s and 60s was a lot of that. And then just user-created trails, people hiking out their back door and hiking up the hills, probably
animals.
Back from the days of the 1850s on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and so animal trails and things, and people just went wherever. And there were, other than the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, there weren't purpose-built trails.
Right.
And so, and especially between the Museum of Natural History and the zoo, there was a lot of, you're probably aware of, a lot of trails, a lot of social trails, a lot of trails that just go hither and yon all over. Some are good, some are bad, some are ugly. You know, it's like the spider web of trails that gets built over time. And some are mountain bikeable, but a lot are not, and which is fine.
Yeah.
To have segregated trails, I personally think, is good. And but back to Trails Utah and Sarah Bennett, she had this vision, gosh, it just almost a decade ago, maybe 8 years ago, the Zoo to You project, we were calling it, and that was to improve the trails between the zoo and up to the University of Utah. And Sarah organized a bunch of meetings with folks from, this is the place, State Park, right? That you go through state park land there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in Salt Lake County, and I believe some Salt Lake County folks were involved, and Salt Lake City folks, and the University of Utah folks.
Yeah.
And I had a series of meetings trying to figure out how we could clean up the trail system there, how we could improve the trail system, how we could get rid of some of the bad trails and get more good trails, how we could improve the signage, how we could get maps that actually reflected the good trails that we wanted people to use. And out of that, Salt Lake City did, trails are an important thing. And they then decided, formed their Department of Trails and Natural Areas out of those meetings.
Started a new department that didn't exist.
It started
before.
A new department.
Wow. So,
and they did a trails plan, but it was brand new, and they jumped on trying to put together this trails plan. And maybe they didn't include enough people, although they gave plenty of public notices, had a bunch of different open houses and workshops and information on the web and all sorts of things about the trail plan. Not everyone knew about it, and some folks were caught flat-footed, or, you know, thought that a lot of things were happening when the Salt Lake City first put together their, you know, thought that new trails plan. It kind of flew through and the city approved it. And then when construction started, a lot of folks were surprised, and some folks didn't want to see more users in the foothills.
So maybe talking about opposition here.
Yes.
Is public opposition to what you do common, or is this like kind of a one-off that you guys ran into dealing with those trails?
Boy, you know, it's the NIMBY factor, right? Not right. In my backyard.
Yeah.
But also there is, you know, some land managers, like the Salt Lake Ranger District now is doing this Tri-Canyons Trails Master Plan. Part of that is trying to figure out what user-created trails they should get rid of. Kind of like back in the day when I was advocating for trails in the Marin Headlands with the National Park Service, and they said I knew all the social trails in the world out there, and they did shut those down. And they thought that it was more protective of the environment to have fewer...
Mm. What are your thoughts on that, just generally? Are there people who just think, like, don't touch the mountain at all, don't cut any trails, or is that, like, a super common objection that people
you know,
have?
The diversity of human opinion and experience ceases to amaze me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, some people would love to see downhill jump trails all over everywhere. Some people think that the best way to protect the natural world is keep people the heck out.
Okay.
Where do you leave nature that? To nature.
What's your philosophy?
And I think that trails are a way that people can connect with land exactly. and nature. And it's great exercise. It's good physical health as well as mental health. And if you have trails that are properly built and designed, then they're not harmful to the environment. And if you've done your permitting and your analysis, and you make sure you're not going through endangered species habitat, and you make sure that you do have all your weed seed free equipment, and you're not introducing new invasive weed species, and when you do things right, then you can build trails new and protect the environment, but benefit the public.
It's a win-win. So yeah, let's get kind of back to the Save Our Foothills, because I remember I was really upset because I was so excited that they finally started having more and more trails going into that area, because it was kind of like, you know, on the south end of the valley we had gobs and gobs of trails, and on the north end of the valley we had like one.
Yes.
You know, and I was just like so excited that Salt Lake County was starting to build some trails, and to
Salt
me
Lake City.
Or Salt Lake City, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
And to me it seemed like, because I had all their information, it was pretty easy to find, that talked about their, it seemed to me like they had done their due diligence. And but then when I found out, like, and I'm using air quotes, like, drastically here, a Save Our Foothills so came in and stopped everything, like, literally in its tracks, I was just devastated.
Yeah, right. Well, because there's a fraction of people that didn't want to see trails. They didn't want to see more people. They didn't want to see mountain bikes on where there hadn't been mountain bikes. You know, the Bonneville Shoreline Trail was really the only purpose-built trail and the only place that generally you'd see many bikes. And some folks don't love mountain bikes on their walking trails that where they take an evening stroll that's nice and quiet and peaceful. So I get it, right? There's a lot of diversity in that take.
I think it's like some of the big, huge jump line trails can be kind of ugly. I get that. And
Right, the bobsled trail, it's kind of, it needs some help, needs some love, needs some redesign. And so, but that's where, if you properly design your trail system, you make room for everyone. And actually that Foothills Trail, if you plan, did have some hiking-only trails and some biking-only trails and then multi-use trails.
Because you see the signs, they're like heels not wheels and wheels not heels, right? They're like, and this is frustrating too, that they really did do everything they were supposed to do, took care of all the checks and balances, did all the meetings, got the approval, and then a whole bunch of people are like, oh, wait, I own a house here, so it should be my decision who gets to use all of this land up behind it. We're like, oh, wait. Right.
Oh, yes, kind of right. There's lots of reasons why different folks didn't want to see more trails. But I think the majority, maybe the silent majority of folks did want to see more trails, but there was a very vocal minority. And they raised some good points on occasion. And I can understand that. You know, I don't want to totally diss folks, but there was also some things that were said that were not wholly accurate.
Okay.
And that's, of course, frustrating when you hear people say things that intentionally are not accurate.
So what are some examples of those? I'm curious.
I probably don't want to get into some of those details. But, Such as, maybe just one example is, you know, one person said that it was, you know, culturally significant Native American land that were very special to those people. Well, then the city heard that and said, well, gee, we don't want to be insensitive to the Native Americans. And have we gone out and asked those people? And the trails planner said, well, no, but we hadn't heard anything from anyone. And we had public comment periods and they never said anything. So we assumed they were okay with it. So then they went out and did outreach with the Native American communities in the area. And they didn't want to bait them. And so they said, you know, in the Salt Lake Valley, the Salt Lake City area, what are the areas that are really most culturally important to you? And they said, well, Warm Springs, down near the Chevron Refinery, 2300 North, the Warm Springs area was important. And City Creek Canyon and Immigration Canyon, the water, you know, they're very important sacred areas because that's where the, you know, hunting and fishing were and all that. And they never mentioned the mountains or the hillsides.
And when
up
people
there.
Were building homes up in Immigration, I'm sure they didn't.
Yeah, and
out
people have been building homes
people.
Up there and riding motorcycles and driving Jeeps around for decades. Anyways, the long and short of that whole thing is that, like, Salt Lake City then took a step back and decided they would do a more intensive cultural, historic, ecological and environmental review of the whole thing.
And I guarantee the people stopping it, that wasn't even
that's a pretty disingenuous
environment sort
of thing.
Yeah,
that wasn't their concern.
Yeah, well, you know, that may or may not be.
Have to dot the I's and cross the T's.
Exactly. But finally, they have done that, you know, and at least they've got that, what they call it, 19th Avenue, the top trail that's the downhill mountain bike trail, and they call it you know, that's a great trail. It's great fun. Lots of people use it. And so, you know, they're getting things done. I believe this year they're going to finish the trail that goes up from the top of Dry Creek up to the top of Twin Peaks. So that's moving forward.
Because that's what I was going to ask next. It sounds like stuff's starting to move forward.
Yes. So they finally, I'm not exactly sure whether they got the final city council mayor sign off on their reviews. I'm exactly sure. I think they're doing that this spring, but the anticipation is that things are starting to move again, and they're going to do more work. But the central area around and just east of City Creek Canyon, you know, they've said, okay, we've built trails that were on the master plan in that area. You know, we got those done, and so where's the next area where they want to focus trails? And they said that the next area and the least controversial area is where they're going to start doing things, which is going to be back. Remember when I said that the up above Ensign Peak when I first saw the building section of Bonneville Shoreline Trail? Well, now they're going to continue that section of Bonneville Shoreline Trail out to connect to those new 16 miles of Bonneville Shoreline Trail up in Bountiful.
Because I've seen Davis County. Like, I noticed they've been improving the trail from the north side of City Creek to where the radio towers are. They've been kind of recutting that.
Oh,
is that what you're talking about?
Really, from, you know, you go up through there and you get to the service road up there. That goes up to the communication towers.
Yeah.
From there, they're going to loop around. You know, the service road goes up steep. They're going to loop around that lowest communications tower and then cut across back across the service road, and then it's going to contour around to connect to the south end of the BST up in Davis County.
So they're going to make a section from the radio tower to the new BST, because right now the new BST kind of starts in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to connect to there, and then furthermore, there's a trail.
That's going to be awesome.
There's a little downhill trail similar to bobsled up there. Are you familiar with that?
Like, is it Lost Lad?
Exactly. Lost Lad. And so they're going to put in a new uphill trail that'll connect into Lost Lad. I'm not sure if it's going to be just uphill or multi-directional, but I believe there's two or three new trails that are going to go in that area.
Oh, okay.
And so then you'll be able to access that from City Creek Canyon side, or down off of Victory Road, up through that way, up through hell. What do they call it? Hell's Canyon. Hell's,
yeah.
That area. Down, yeah. That area. I mean, they're going to rework those switchbacks up there, and then also you're going to be able to get it from Rose Park,
Wild Rose Park.
Wild Rose Park.
Yeah.
Up in Davis County. So there'll be a couple different ways to access that new trail system up in there.
The Davis County people and the North Salt Lake Davis County people are going to have some awesome trails like in the very near future. Like it's really good up there. That new section of shoreline is just, it's awesome. And that's so cool that it's connected from the radio tower.
Yes. That's it'll be a great thing. And to the extent that, you know, people may find, you know, trails are busy, right? More and more people are out on trails. There's 8,000 plus kids in the high school mountain bike league. You know, people are out hiking and biking, hiking and trail running. I see so many trail runners. It's amazing. But we need more trails.
Oh, yeah.
And more trails are a good thing.
Like,
and,
like
and
it's not easy to do. And it's,
yeah, you know, it takes years to push on these projects and get the money and get the permits and get the plans approved and attend community council meetings and city council meetings and county council meetings and Forest Service meetings, you know. It just takes a lot to push these things through, but they're so needed, and it's great. And so anyways, so Davis County was great. You know, one of the members of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail used to live up in Davis County. Dave Roth lived up in Bountiful, mm-hmm. and Dave was the one who worked with their city planner, Jeff Euler, to get that section of Bonneville Shoreline Trail done. And a bunch of it went through the Forest Service lands also. So the Forest Service, again, Zinnia, and Becky Hotze helped push that through. And it takes a team, takes a village of people willful to work on these things to get it through. Because you can't draw a line for a trail and have it just be on your property unless you happen to be lucky to live up in Park City. We were able to do that. Or down in Draper and Corner Canyon, they were able mm-hmm. to do that. But most places, you can't have a trail that just stays on one parcel. Like, you might be familiar with the Butterfield trails. Yeah. Have you ridden out there much?
I'd like to. I've heard they're good.
You haven't been out there yet?
No.
What? Oh, you got to get out there. Yeah, Butterfield, just immediately south of the copper mine. The Salt Lake County worked with Spencer Millerberg, who donated a couple of $100,000 toward the venture. He's got several kids on the in the high school mountain bike league riding. I think they ride on with Joe Darton. You know Joe?
Oh yeah,
Darton. Sure, Darton. Yeah, he's great and a great trail advocate. She's the newest member of the Trails Utah Trails Utah board. And anyways, the Salt Lake County Parks and Rec spend a lot of time and effort because, again, you say, oh, let's build trails through here. And Spencer was willing to give the money and make it all happen. Well, then there's the land deals with South Jordan and the Kennecott Copper Company and the Bureau of Land Management owned some of the parcels. There was, you know, like four or five different entities that owned pieces of the land. So then you got to work through all those processes with each and every one of those entities to make it happen. But and they started with getting the Bonneville Shoreline Trail West going, which in theory, and again, this will take decades to happen. And depending on what happens with Kennecott, you know, we would love to see a loop of Bonneville Shoreline Trail go all the way around the Ochre Mountains because Tooele is fast growing.
Yeah.
A loop.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And then we would also, and on the south end, that can connect into Eagle Mountain in the Eagle Mountain Trail system.
God, I'm getting all these big, beautiful rides pictured in my head.
Right? No,
I love it when things connect.
Exactly. So there's lots of things happening, but they take time and energy and meetings and permitting. It's permitting and money and money and money, and it takes folks like, you know, individual donors that can give big chunks of money to make things happen. It takes lots of small donors. And Trails Utah is always trying to push projects, but, you know, you need matching funds. You need to have not only matching funds, but even when you get the matches, the entities like the Division of Outdoor Recreation, the Matt creation. They want to see that the entity applying for the grant is putting in their own money. So, you know, you ask for a $150,000 grant, and they want to see $15,000 come out of your organization. Well, gosh, we need people to donate funds to Trails Utah to be able to make something like that happen so that we can meet all their match requirements. And it just, you know, you pull your hair out sometimes trying to pull things together.
Right.
But we have had a few very generous donors, like the Back to the Zoo to You project and what that turned into. You know, we have some dreams and that visions, you know, Stairway to Heaving.
Oh, yeah.
The trail that's
my
actually called
trail
the Skyline Vision Trail.
Yeah.
That loops up and around Red Butte Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then continues across on the north side.
Yeah.
And that really kind of sketchy trail that then connects eventually to Dry Creek Canyon.
Yep.
And so I just got done last week, spent hours and hours and hours putting together the environmental review packages.
Really?
So that we can reroute some of that.
Oh, okay.
And right, and if we can get that, you know, because a bunch of that is on Forest Service land, mm-hmm. so you have to do their NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act reviews. So, you know, when you have to put together this package of all their NEPA, all the trail segments and all the grades and all the specifications and all the maps and all the drawings and all the, you know, just the package so that then their environmental reviewers can review it and hopefully approve it. And then maybe next year in 2025, viewers 2026, will get a bunch of those trail projects going. But, you know, they take years. It takes a long time to slowly push things through.
So a couple other questions, too. What about, like, because it kind of seems like the bottleneck of that area is Dry Creek Canyon. And weren't they going to make a lot of climbing trail up Dry Creek and then the old Dry Creek trail be a downhill trail? Is that still a possibility or...
Oh, yes. Well, yes and no. That's not like a possibility this year and probably not next year because, like I say, the Salt Lake City folks, they're going to focus their attention for probably 2 years or so or three on the area north work connecting into Davis County. But they are going to finish that segment of trail connecting up to Twin Peaks, I believe. Mm-hmm. But then... each segment, you know, what the city decided is that they really need to go through a good public process, review process on every trail segment. You can't just get a blanket review of a trail's master plan and then go build stuff. You want to make sure that everyone is happy with every segment. And
will
so, for example, if you were to build that uphill trail, if that was to be on the Huntsman Cancer side of Dry Creek, the south side of Dry Creek, and loop up and around that way. Not only is that kind of a tricky build, but for folks that want to just walk, because there's a lot of people that hike in the area, trail run there, now you're pushing them further away from where the homes are there, right? And so not everyone's going to be thrilled with that option. And to have, you know, there's a lot of people that like being down in the gully because it's a riparian zone and there's good bird watching down there. Mm. They don't want to be hiking up on the open ridge in the sun.
Right.
So you need to take into consideration all the different people's input and the ecological resource and the practicality of building the trail. And who owns the land, you know, what's for university land, what's Forest Service land, you know, it gets complicated. And so that's where they're going to, you know, they're taking a step back so that they can get each and every piece done correctly.
That was the one I was most excited for.
Oh, yeah. Well,
what about the scout camp up Mill Creek Canyon? What the future of that?
The scout camp is alive. Camp Tracy is alive and doing well. They split off a few years ago from Boy Scouts of America, which now I don't even think is called that. I think
Scouting America.
Yeah. Okay. I heard that they were going to sell that or something. Is that just a rumor I'm hearing?
That's just rumor. Well, you know, but it's possibility. And I'm on this Central Wausau Commission Stakeholders Council, and we have a Mill Creek Committee that I'm on. And as part of that, we've been working with the Boy Scouts, hoping and that possibly, maybe, we can get them to sell a conservation easement on their land. Because my worst fear is that someday scouting falls out of favor and they sell all that land to Ivory Homes,
right,
who then swings their wind and gets the zoning changed and they build a bunch of condos up there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be sad?
That would be terrible.
Would be awful. It would be great if we could get the scouts to sell a conservation easement where, say, they get $1 million today and that prevents them from ever developing that land into homes in the future.
That would be awesome.
But they haven't budged on that yet, so good things take time. We'll keep pushing on that string. But you can, you know, they're private property owners. Okay. They have private property rights, and you have to respect that. So it is what it is.
So, yeah, though, I guess those rumors aren't true that I've been hearing. gosh, there's so much. The last thing I want to just talk about real quick is I heard in the news that Summit County purchased the 910 cattle ranch.
Oh, yes, exactly. Going north from Parley's Summit. Yeah,
like the Jeremy Ranch Road.
In fact, I mentioned I put together this big environmental review package for the Forest Service, which includes four small trail reroute projects in the area of Red Butte Garden Museum of Natural History to try to improve those trails. And then also part of that environmental review package was putting their reroute for that upper middle section of the Mormon Pioneer Trail. You know which part I'm talking about. You know, after the second road crossing, there's that really erosive, sketchy section that always sucks and it talks and it's too steep and it's... And
that part's hard, yeah.
So we're proposed to put a reroute there. So that's part of that environmental review package because that section, why nothing's ever happened to that is it's on Forest Service land.
Okay.
And it's a National Historic Trail.
Right.
And so... It's got to go through the environmental reviews. And then the last piece of that environmental review package that I put together is to reroute a section of the Great Western. So going from the Sheep Trail, which is from down, either you can catch it from Lamb's Canyon exit or you can catch it from down in Mountaindale.
Yeah.
And it's that trail. It starts off as a service road, turns into semi-single track, then it turns into... a kind of not so great single track that goes straight up the pipeline.
Yeah,
alignment,
just kind of goes up. Yeah, alignment. Just kind of goes up. And
but then it
yeah.
goes past right past the end of the new wildlife crossing bridge where they put up no trespass. Don't want people to disturb the wildlife.
Right.
And then it cuts onto the service road that goes up to the communication towers north of I-80.
Right.
And that you've probably ridden up that or pushed your bike up that.
Right.
I've pushed my bike up that several times.
Right.
Yeah. I've been yelled at there too for being on private property and stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's not great. And so I have a trail re-proposed for that.
Oh, cool.
Oh, cool.
And so that would then connect you up across onto the Great Western Trail that goes all the way to Big Mountain Summit, to Big Mountain Pass, and connecting and back to the very top of the Mopai.
That's a super cool trail. It's not user-friendly at all, but it's super cool.
And so Salt Lake's... And that's a little bit of a checkerboard between Salt Lake City lands and Forest Service parcels. And so Salt Lake City wants to complete their watershed management plan. Salt Lake, that they've been working on for too many years. COVID got in the way, right?
Right,
And it got disrupted. But hopefully next year, maybe possibly, they're going to finish their watershed management plan, which will include, then they said they'll consider a finished project like that, which would be to reroute sections of the Great Western Trail so that it's more user-friendly. Because right now there's some sections that are straight fall line trails that are erosive, and then the drainage goes down toward the reservoir. We don't want, of course, you know, erosion going down toward the reservoir. It seems like a good place to fix the trail and have it properly designed. But then to answer your question, what's the name of the ranch?
It's the 910 ranch.
The 910 ranch is right on the east side of that, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we're planning ahead here. Good things take time, but you got to plan ahead because good things, this is going to be like 5 years in the making or more.
And Summit County is already kind of envisioning having some different plans, some areas where it can be mountain biking, some areas where it can be hiking, somewhere areas where it can just be preserved as natural area. Right, you need to make sure that all the different parties where are happy,
right,
and everyone's voices are being heard, but having the Great Western Trail that can be the backbone of the top of trails going down into there. So for the folks that, then you won't have to drive your car all the way over Parley Summit and start down in right. the Summit County side. You could start at Lamb's Canyon exit, or you could start down at near the reservoir and go up right. the Mormon Pioneer and loop around there. So wow. there's several different options. You talk about long distance trails, right? There's some yeah. good long distance rides there. Wow. There's several different options. You kind of like that. Now I take it you've done my favorite new long distance. This isn't that long of a distance because I know you do much more than this. But I start at my house, ride down to Mill Creek Canyon, up to Rattlesnake, and all the way. And you can ride up the Rattlesnake out pipeline down uh-huh. the New Granger Peak Trail, cross the freeway, ride yep. the Point Trail,
yeah.
and then cut through the neighborhood to catch the Bonneville Shoreline Trail and uh-huh. ride all the way to the Capitol, and then spin it and come back.
String that long of a ride together, and I mean, it's pretty epic, and you don't have to drive your car to yeah, Park right? City to do an epic ride. You can do them here. It's so cool.
I say, you know, think globally, ride locally.
So there when you go. Can get oh, that needs to be a Maybird right? t-shirt. There you go.
Global. To wrap up on the trail construction piece, it was through Sarah Bennett and Trails Utah and really Troy Duffin, who lives in this neighborhood, who built, I believe, over half of the trails in Park City. He was one of the first guys to
really
use a machine to build trail where you could really build solid trail and tread. And Joey Klein, I'll give a shout out to Joey Klein with IMBA, who wrote the book Trail Solutions, who is the modern era of trail building where you have rolling contours that are great to ride, right? They're fun.
Right.
They're flowy trails, drain water off, and they require very little maintenance.
Right.
You know, if you have water going down your trail, it gets rutted and muddy and erodes, and it's bad for riding, it's bad for hiking, it's bad for the environment. But you have a flowy trail, it goes up and down and up and down, and the water drains off it. Well, Joey wrote the book, and he also helped to try to build a trail like that by hand.
Oh my gosh!
It's harder. Yeah. It's a lot harder. You know, with a machine, you can build them right and build them solid, and they're meant to last for decades with very little maintenance. And so, you know, because you can run your blade, you can get the exact amount of outslope on the trail and mm-hmm. and like I say, this rolling contour that drains water and is fun to ride. But you know, it's through that modern design and modern trail building methods that we're able to build great trails.
I think they need a new one up Granger Peak. That's not
and then the last on, you know, I spend my time on pushing, you know, So someday, maybe, we're going to get the trail, Bonneville Shoreline Trail, finished from H-Rock to Immigration Canyon.
Yes.
Get that section built. Oh, but, you know, it's all private property.
Right.
So there's a couple of folks that we need their help and cooperation to be able to build that. And then there is the section between Big and Little Cottonwood Canyon.
Yep.
That's been in the news. It was in the newspaper in the Salt Lake Tribune just recently about Deaf Smith Canyon
mm-hmm.
and issues with that. And there's potentially some deal that could go through where hopefully a landowner might get what he wants and we could get what we want, which is a trail easement that would
right.
go a significant part of that way. And then there'd be just one last landowner we need to work with to be able to finish that segment of trail. So, you know, hopefully things can happen, but you know, you got to push and it's complicated, and in city governments and the Forest Service can't approach private property owners and try to push them or work with them to try to figure out these win-win solutions. But anyways, there's lots of things in the works, and hopefully they'll keep moving forward.
Can you just
forward.
Purchase easements from property owners?
Some on occasion, but you know, usually if you have unbuildable land, the landowner is like, buy the whole thing. Why would I just sell an easement?
Right, yeah.
But, you know, if they want to hold on to their land and they want privacy of the land right behind maybe be where their house is, then selling an easement is a smart thing to do.
Right.
And we can make the easement where their house is then as wide as they want to get the dollar value to the right number to make it worth it. The other way the easements, trail easements, usually happen is when somebody wants to subdivide land. Say they own 150 acres, and they want to. There's just a little tiny bit along the base where they might be able to build, and they need to go through a subdivision process. And usually, that subdivision process is that's not an inherent right on the land when they need to change their zoning, and so then they get an inherent little horse trading. And so they say, well, okay, you can subdivide and we'll change the zoning, but you need to give trail easements for trails on our trails master plan.
Okay. You kind of trade, and
you need,
right?
Yeah, so you, yep, yeah. Exactly. So you make it a win-win for everyone.
So as a final note here, what can our people on the team do that would help you in your mission?
Oh, let's see. When you're riding your bike, ride on the outside edge of the trail. Don't just ride in the center.
Okay.
So water pools. You want to ride in the inside edge. You want to ride in the outside edge. A little bit of wider trails are good. You want to be courteous.
Right.
Be nice. If trail users, hikers and runners have bad experience with hikers, then they're going to throw monkey wrenches into the permitting process.
Right.
So be friendly. Right. Go slow and say hello.
Right.
Be kind when you pass. Tip your bike out of the way. So, you know, trail etiquette is really important.
Okay.
And, you know, don't go too fast. And don't skid. Things like that. But then on the bigger picture, let your government officials, let your city government folks know.
Get involved, basically.
Yeah, get involved. Get involved. Let people know that you want more trails and that they can be built where it's protective of the environment and protective of other trail users and all that. And then I'll give a plug for, you know, donate to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail Committee. Donate to Trails Utah, who actually gets trails built because they need money. There's usually these matching requirements where their organization needs to come up with money to match, and it's always difficult.
Right.
And so that it really does make a difference and really does make trails happen.
Hey, Joe, can we put a link to their website?
Yes. We'll definitely do that. To Trails Utah, to the Bonneville Shoreline Committee.
Trailsutah.org.
Excellent. We will go ahead and link to that. Well, John, thank you so much for your time today. This has been really fantastic. And thank you, of course, for all that you do. Like, what we do is nothing without what you do. Well, John, thank you. So first and foremost, you're the bedrock of all this great stuff that's going on.
I'm just one in the great community of people pushing trails. And, you know, I've put in my time. But there's folks like, you know, Sarah Bennett and Troy Duffin and Joey Klein and tons of other, and Greg Hilbig and tons of other folks that have put in tons of time to make trails happen. It takes a village, takes a lot of work to make it all come together.
Well, if there's ever anything that we can do to make your work more fruitful, be sure to let us know. If you guys have any questions, we'll go ahead and pass them on, address them in the next episode. Make sure to ride courteous and ride safe, and send some love to Trails Utah. Thanks so much, everybody.
All right, thanks.
Love to Trails Utah. Thanks so much, everybody.
All right, thanks.
As priority.